Foggy Bottom, T.C. Boyle's in Foggy Bottom. Isn't that where the CIA is? Let's find out what he's doing there. He's got a new book out, a novel, T.C. Boyle, The Harder They Come. It's great. And it's very apropos of the age in which we live, which is a little unusual for him, I think, isn't it? I'm not sure. Let's find out what he's doing there, first of all. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Michael. It's good to hear your voice again. Speaking of the CIA, this is a secure line, isn't it? No one's listening in.
No, no one.
Okay,
Believe me, at this point in my career, no one is listening.
Well, I've had a delightful morning here in our nation's capital.
What are you doing?
I took a three-hour shower and flushed the toilet 22 times.
Three-hour shower.
Don't forget, my dear fellow, yes. I am coming from Santa Barbara, where we have just endured our fourth consecutive rainy season.
Your rainy season?
Yeah. We have no water. We are on a 30% mandatory reduction. And what we're reduced to at my house is my wife and I bathe just once a month together in the tub, after which we wash the clothing in the water, boil the spaghetti, and then put the rest on the trees in the yard.
Yeah. So how many years have you been married now? Once a month in the tub.
Well, you know, it's become a virtue to stink, actually.
Yes, what an interesting way to begin a conversation.
Mm-hmm. And curiously, yes. Michael, what? When the restrictions began last February, a year ago, our local newspaper outed our biggest water users. Now, I live in a village of 9,000 people. Mm-hmm. We have two golf courses, three hotels, and many wealthy landowners and so on. The woman who used the most water by far, I won't name her, but you can take a guess. She is a billionaireess who has her own talk show. And she was outed for using more water than anyone else. The following month, she reduced her water usage by 80%. So God bless her.
Okay, millionaireess has her own...
Excuse me, Michael. Billionaire.
Billionaireess. And I think you said that right. Billionaireess.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Has her own talk show.
But we won't want to out her as a water waster because she has come in compliance.
What is she doing with all the water?
Well, truthfully, I believe she just wasn't aware and had a big estate and was foolish enough to have a lawn. Can you imagine anyone having a lawn?
Yeah, in Santa Barbara?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah. What are they going to in Santa Barbara in lieu of lawns? Just gravel?
Dirt.
Swept yards?
We have dirt. Dirt is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. What's what they have in the, you know, in Alabama, and they have swept yards. You know, there's clay, there's just clay, and they just sweep it. It looks very nice.
Yeah, we don't bother sweeping our dirt. We just add to it daily.
Say, you know what? Not to change the subject or anything like that, but I did want to congratulate you on receiving the L.A. Times Book Prize.
Well, thank you so much.
Except, of course, you know, it is lifetime achievement. That's a little scary.
It is a little scary, Michael. This is my 25th book, and I figure I probably will write only maybe 25 more. So no. I'm going to tell them to wait on this award for another 25 years.
Yeah. What is it? Has your metabolism ever been studied by science?
Yeah. Well, not only was I born naturally caffeinated, but I also have the metabolism of a weasel. I eat my body weight every day, which isn't that much, actually. I only weigh 160 pounds.
Yeah. So that's it, huh? It's all metabolism, right?
I don't know.
Some talent, but a lot of metabolism.
Yeah, I don't really know. I just have enormous desire and energy, and my life is my work. I just can't stop doing it, and I'm very happy, perfectly happy.
And this one is a good example. This is a brilliant book, I think.
Well, thanks so much. I mean, it's difficult to make jokes about it because this is a drama about this phenomenon of the individual shooter in America. Right. I keep wondering, why are the mentally unbalanced provided in our country with automatic weapons?
Yeah, it's a good question. Mm-hmm. You know, in all this, your book, but everything in this area that's so common now. You know that poem To Elsie, William Carlos Williams?
Yes, tell me.
The pure products of America go crazy. Mm. That begins that way. You know that one?
Mountain, I like it.
Mountain folk from Kentucky are the ribbed North Shore of Jersey with its isolate lakes and valleys, its deaf mutes, thieves, old names, and promiscuity between devil may care men who have taken to railroading out of sheer lust of adventure.
Wow, I love it. I would have used that as my epigraph if I'd known.
Yeah, William Carlos Williams. So the pure products of America go crazy. And it's sort of like that, isn't it? I mean, it seems that way now, and this book encapsulates that.
Yes, and well, I've used a different quote for my epigraph. It's from D.H. Lawrence's Studies in Classic American Literature. The essential American soul is hard, isolate, stoic, and a killer. It has never yet melted. Now, of course, this is an Englishman writing about this in the 1920s, but it stands as a proposition, and I wonder, is that true?
Yeah. What do you conclude after having written the book?
Well, of course, don't forget, Michael, I am an artist, and yes. I'm making fiction, and I want the audience to draw conclusions. That said, I expect that perhaps we're still a pioneering country, and the crazies of the past may have gone into Indian territory and survived or not. Now, of course, they have to live amongst us, and all this violent impulse is turned inward.
Yeah. I think it's a little hard on us.
It is hard on us, and it would help, though, if we put the mentally unstable into mental institutions and treated them rather than giving them some meds they don't take and letting them go on the streets.
Yes, or electing them to office.
Mm-hmm.
The berserkers, that comes up in this book. These it could have been called that, actually, don't you think, the berserkers?
Yes, one of the difficult things for me was to enter into the mind of this schizophrenic, and not only him, but his girlfriend, who is a member of the Sovereign Citizens Movement, a far right-wing movement in America, which denies all governmental authority. They don't want to pay taxes or have license plates on their cars, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Who does? I mean, I don't really enjoy paying taxes either, but we do have a society, and we must sustain it. And so I had to enter into the minds of these characters and try to make them sympathetic, even though they may be people you disagree with. Now, of course, I can't see your audience, and I'm sure at least 80% of them are sovereign citizens, so I don't want to offend them.
I don't think so, really.
No?
Just fallen away Democrats, mostly.
Okay. Fair enough.
All right. Let's set up the whole premise now. This is actually based on two stories or two things that happened in the news, and they weren't stories. They were real news.
Yeah.
This gentleman who went on this trip down, was it to Costa Rica?
Yeah, actually, in fact, this was an incident that took place in Mexico some years ago, which I read about in the newspaper. I'm the last person in America, incidentally, who actually reads a newspaper every day. And an elderly man on a cruise was on the tour bus in my tailing in Costa Rica when his group was assaulted by three young men, two with knives, one with a gun. This man acted instinctively. He was a former Marine, even though he was extremely elderly, Michael, at 70 years old. And he actually killed one of the assailants with his bare hands, scaring the others off. And for this, was celebrated as a hero.
Mm-hmm. And the other story is about this young man who was definitely a berserker.
Mm-hmm.
And went on a killing spree and was hunted down. And you tied those two stories together. What was that second story, this young man?
The second story is of the shooter himself. This is a young man living in Fort Bragg in Northern California who was schizophrenic and was doing all right, living with his grandmother until she died. He became delusional, wound up shooting two people, and then lived in the woods for 5 weeks while he was the subject of a great manhunt he was able to elude. So I've put these two stories together in a fictional context and have created the first character as the father of the individual who is the shooter. And, of course, there is an ironic contrast here. The first is celebrated for an act of violence. The second is reviled and hunted down.
Right. And it's a father and son thing as well, because there may be similar personality types in a different period of time.
I've wondered about this for many years. In my book, World's End, in 1987, I gave a fictional history of some characters in the Hudson Valley where I grew up. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if characteristics are passed down from a parent to children. That is, you have your mother's nose and your father's eyes and so on. Mm-hmm. Well, do you also have their personality and also... Mm-hmm.
I love that book, by the way.
Thank you.
Might be my favorite. That's an amazing.
Well, thanks so much. And a propensity to act in a behavioral way. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, now that we've decoded the human genome, biologists are telling us that free will is a smaller balance against our nature than we had suspected, that everything is driven by hormones. And incidentally, along these lines, remember the movie The March of the Penguins a few years ago? You know, children were allowed to see this movie, The March of the Penguins. I thought it should have been rated triple X, because this is exactly what we do. We are completely driven to these bizarre behaviors by our hormones, even though we try to deny it.
Yeah. Okay, now I can't think about the penguins right now, but I'll get back to you on that one. I'll go back to this a little bit now. And in some, like the shooter, though, I mean, given the times in which we live in, actually does somewhat become celebrated. I mean, he's hunted down by, but he's celebrated for the very fact that he is being hunted down.
Yes, some news sources have tried to deny telling us the name or qualifications of the shooters so that copycat shooters won't revere them as heroes. I don't think it's quite possible in our culture, obsessed as it is with the news, to do this. But yes, these people become celebrated for standing as anti-authoritarian figures, even though what they do is reprehensible.
Yeah, and the fact that they're psychotic or sociopaths is not even a factor anymore. I mean, that's, to me, that's what's sort of amazing about the period in which we live now, and also the book. That there are behaviors now that are sociopathic and psychopathic that are regarded as commonplace, everyday occurrences now.
Yes, and you know, there's an irony here in my own life that I delivered this book in the fall of 2013. This is 9 months before last May's attacks in Santa Barbara. It was eerily similar to the story I've told, a young man, mentally unbalanced, who has access to weapons, stabbed his three roommates to death at UCSB and then shot several people before killing himself. This was in May of last year. And so it happened that I was in New York at the time at a friend's birthday party in a nice lake in a sylvan atmosphere, and my phone began to ring, and people said, oh, God, are you all right? Well, yes, I was all right. I wasn't even in Santa Barbara. And yet, in a larger sense, I'm not all right, nor should any of us be. This seems to happen monthly now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, or even weekly.
Yeah.
All right. So now, getting back to the novel and not an indictment of American culture, which is too easy, really. You know, we're talking about the American soul here, I guess, because you've got the father, who's of the previous generation. And he's very American, and the son, who is like a rebel American, like he identifies entirely with this mountain man,
John Coulter.
John Coulter.
In your wonderful opening routine, Michael, you mentioned you made a joke about the death penalty and running from the shooters. Well, this is exactly what Coulter's famous run is. He was captured by the Blackfeet. He was a mountain man of the early 1900s, and was in Indian Territory in order to trap beaver, because the fashion in, the fashion in Wisconsin, but certainly in New York and Boston and Paris and so on, was to have top hats, which were made from felt, made from beaver pelts. At any rate, the Blackfeet caught him, stripped him naked, and debated, how shall we torture him to death? And they finally decided, well, let's have a kind of fox hunt and let him run. We'll give him a 100-yard start, and our swiftest braves will chase him down with their spears. Well, Coulter, of course, he had a great incentive, did manage to outrun them and survive. And so he becomes Adam's, the shooter's, great hero. Adam wants to emulate him and be as hard as he is. So the harder they come, the notion is there is no middle ground. There is no negotiation. There is just brute force.
Right. And that, again, seems characteristic of our times. The idea of compromise and negotiation, even on a political level, or certainly on a personal level. I mean, there are things being committed in the news, you know, if you look at the Middle East and ISIS and all this stuff, that would seem to be unbelievable, and yet now they're just reported, and here's the latest outrage. But it's true, you know, on this side as well.
Yes, of course, and, you know, I am focusing here on this phenomenon of the individual American shooter, but, of course, we have, in the African-American community, we have gang violence, gun violence, we have the attack in Europe on political expression and freedom by extremist groups. It seems as if all civilization is under attack at this juncture, and that the world is primarily ruled in the way of Coulter and the Indians and Adam by gangs, by violence, by brute force.
Well, and it seems to me like Adam talks about hostiles. It's him and the hostiles.
Yes.
Everywhere he sees a hostile now, especially the Chinese for some reason. He focuses on them and thinks the Chinese.
In this case, I had the police report of the actual shooter from this one incident I was talking about, an extensive police report which talked of some of his delusions. And one of his delusions was he was obsessed with the Chinese as the new hostiles, sort of the new Indians, and you could have 1,000 Coulters and they couldn't fight them off, etc. In the police report, it was found that he was arrested for going to the Chinese consulate in San Francisco.
He did.
And throwing these tinfoil red Chinese stars over the wall into the consulate with some obscure messages. And so this gave me an idea of how he might think and why he might think this way, and enabled me to enter into his consciousness. Mm-hmm. I should say, too, that I had written about a schizophrenic before in Riven Rock.
Right.
And further, when I was a boy, up until around 18 or so, one of my very closest friends from kindergarten on became increasingly disturbed and was finally hospitalized as a schizophrenic. And I loved him, and I loved his notions and the way he thought. And yet, it was still extreme and bizarre and beyond what we could imagine. And so I'm sort of channeling him, too, in creating Adam, the schizophrenic.
Yeah. And I was just thinking that he's an advanced case. This, you know, Adam obviously is psychotic.
Yes, and there's
but
a further.
Let me just finish here now.
Tom. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm just finishing my thought. Otherwise, I won't do it. Was that it's characteristic of our times? It's all. I mean, all of us. I mean, if you look at, it's all us and hostiles. People are totally paranoid. Like, love of guns is because we think people are there that are going to hurt us, right? I mean, everything now is us and, you know, the people, the immigrants. Our hostiles, you know, it's sort of characteristic of the age right now.
Yes, I think you're right. I mean, I don't want to sound like a sociologist.
Either.
I'm not running for office here.
Yeah.
But I think part of it, too, is this kind of virtual society where there is no public place anymore. I am lucky now. I made my escape from L.A., I think, as you know, Michael, 22 years ago to Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. I live in a village where I can walk. I know everybody. I can make jokes to them at the post office, at the restaurant, at the bank, etc. Most people don't have that anymore. We do everything online. Soon, Amazon will be delivering everything to us by drone. And I think that makes you more paranoid and more suspicious because you don't really know anybody in your community.
Right. And you don't know whose drone it is.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, okay. We got a little far afield here, I feel, in actually discussing the book. It's a great book, and I was quite sympathetic to the father. What's his name?
Stan Stenson.
Stan Stenson.
Yes.
And in that situation he was in, he reacted according to his training and so forth. But then he also indicted this guy who was not the second guy, and he just gave the name out because he wanted to be done with the whole thing. So he wasn't exactly moral, I guess.
Yes, I think in my telling, as you know, I don't really have an agenda. I'm not trying to press a point. I'm just trying to explore something. And so I didn't really know where the book will go or what will happen. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Sten, he does do some things that we might not approve of. And yet, I like your saying that you have sympathy for him. I have sympathy for all three of the characters, even the shooter, because I understand their point of view. I don't agree with what they do necessarily. Mm-hmm. And again, if you should look at the average Hollywood film, for instance, you know, we have the bad guy who is exclusively bad and the good guy who is exclusively good.
Right.
The bad guy torments the good guy for the first 15 minutes of the movie, and then the good guy for the rest of the movie, gets his revenge and we all cheer. But I think life is a little more complicated than that, and I hope that by making you have some sympathy for these characters, we can see that it's a little more complex than simply black and white.
Yeah, and when this all goes down and comes to the ending, which I won't reveal here, but he blames himself for it. He said, "Who's responsible for everything that Adam has done?"
Yes, and there's a moment at the very end of the book, and I don't think it's a spoiler really to talk about it, in which All this has gone down. It's the denouement. We now have a moment to think about it. And Sten is in the parking lot of a fast food joint, and he's always been a tough guy, always operated from violence and power. And now a young guy cuts him off in his truck and curses him. And Sten is about to act instinctively and violently, but he just stops.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's different. That's a change. I sort of wish you would have gone after him. I said. It's a great book. Thanks, Tom, so much for talking with us. This is T.C. Boyle.
The As harder, always, Michael.
The harder they come.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Thanks. Nice talking to you.